You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Welcome into First Take. Happy Thursday. I'm Justine Williamson, filling in for Molly. We have a very fun show today. That's Jay Will. That's Brian Windhorst. How are we doing, guys?
Wendy.
Good morning.
What's up, baby? Ready to talk some hoops?
Please.
Let's do it.
We will have the exclusive reveal of the two-day match lineup for WrestleMania. You don't want to miss that, along with a live sit-down with Stephen A. and WWE CEO Nick Khan. But as Jay said, first we start in the association. Kevin Durant, after being out since March 8th, made his home debut for the Phoenix Suns last night against the Timberwolves. He started 0 for 6 from the field and finished 5 for 18, scoring 16 points in 29 minutes. The Suns beat the Timberwolves 107-100. Here is Kevin Durant after the win.
So miss playing, miss being with the guys. It's a good win for us, and we needed this one. It's hard for me to get sleep today. It was hard for me to stop thinking about the game, and sometimes you can want it too bad, and you come out there and play like, you know, you start rushing and start taking, being uncharacteristic. So I'm glad I'm back.
So Phoenix kept a hold of the fourth seed with their win over the T-Wolves last night. They are now 4-0 this season when KD plays and 21-1 when leading after three quarters. Seeds 6 through 10 in the West are separated by two games, with teams hoping to avoid the play-in tournament. Wendy, I'm going to start with you on this one. How important is home court in the first round of the playoffs for the Suns specifically?
My instincts are to say in the West with what I've seen this year is that home court doesn't matter, seedings doesn't matter, it's just who's healthy and who's playing well because they're so tightly back together. But, but, I know the Warriors aren't in the fifth spot right now, but if you have an opportunity to play the Warriors, the defending champs, who we are going to assume are going to have their act together, this year you want home court against the Warriors. And typically when we're talking about teams that have the chance to play for a title, you're talking about getting multiple rounds at home. That's not going to be the case for the Suns. But I do think with the differential, the way the Warriors play at home and road, and because frankly, the difference between the Suns being in fourth and sliding out of it if they have a bad few days, they need to stay in that spot. And they've got a couple of huge games coming up with the Nuggets. They play the Nuggets tomorrow at home, who could be their second-round matchup if they stay in fourth. And then they play them again next week. I have no idea who's going to play in those games. Jokic has missed a game now with calf soreness. But the Suns, not only do they need to establish a rhythm, but just in case the Warriors are in that fifth seed, Jay, got to try to hold on to four.
You know what, Wendy, if Kevin Durant had played in more than seven games in the year 2023 for the Phoenix Suns, I might agree with you on that. But I think the lack of chemistry and also from being at the Footprint Center in Phoenix for NBA for an NBA Finals experience, it was one of the best experiences in my life. Like, and I've been to a lot of different NBA arenas. I don't think I've ever seen an arena that was so disruptive, that was so energetic, the way they were in Phoenix. So I think having that home crowd behind you, since you talk about that slight margin for error between the fifth and the sixth or seventh or eighth seed, I think it's going to be pivotal for this team that has six games left in the regular season, that is truly trying to find their rhythm and hit the ground running. And because I think the Western Conference is the epitome of the rock, paper, scissor analogy, right? Like, hey, just because A beats B, and B beats C doesn't mean that A can beat C. You know what I mean? So, like, how that works, it's so different this year because of the volatility that I think home court for a team where the big three hasn't really played together as much as they would like, I think is imperative this year more than ever for the Suns.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, Phoenix is a team that needs its role players to play well, okay? Because the other teams are going to just ignore their fifth man on the court a lot of times. So they're going to need Torrey Craig to play well. They're going to need Josh Okogie to play well. They may need Ish Wainwright, who was on a two-way a couple of months ago, to play well. And historically, role players play better at home. And so That's another thing. I still think it's more important for Durant to be healthy and Booker to be hot, which he's hot. But I do think if you're the Suns, even though you've got some guys who have a bunch of series together, the ball's going to find their way to the other teams are going to funnel the ball to those guys, those other role players. And you know, you always hear Shaq talk about the others. The others are going to matter for the Suns on a lot of playoff games this year.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the four seed overall has about a 58% chance winning percentage, right, being at the four seed over the history over the last 25 years. So I think that does help. At the end of the day, though, when you have two of the most efficient scorers in the NBA today, you know, the Phoenix Suns, to me, Wendy, epitomize what one-on-one basketball used to be back in the day. Like, when I see kids play now, it's like you chuck the ball, they take 8,000 dribbles, right? I'm like, man, I'm not trying to guard you for 8,000 dribbles, right? Back in the day, 20 years ago, when we used to play one-on-one against Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, it was turn, face, three dribbles or less. That's why people love playing with Kevin Durant. It's not wasted motion. Mm-hmm. People love playing with Devin Booker. Turn, face, D-Book is making a read, and he's making a play. Get into the lane, drive, kick, get to the rim, pull up mid-range. I think that efficiency in how they play is what makes them elite. So I think their style can translate. It can play anywhere. But considering the lack of chemistry that they have playing together, I think it's easier to find that rhythm at home for the reasons that you made mention of, for the role players finding their rhythm, for people understanding. Even last night, Monty Williams, another great example. Hey, greatness doesn't shake his head, Kevin. Right? Like, those things that happen when you're at home more so than being on the road in those disruptive, kind of volatile environments are way easier to figure out than being on
the road. Can I just say, I spent a lot of time around the Suns last couple of years. It was such a terrific Monty Williams moment because Monty has this way of giving, like, old adage things without sounding corny.
Okay. Yes.
So, like, you can watch. Every time he goes to a press conference, he wears a hat that says WD is greater than WS. Mm-hmm. That means well done is more important than well said, which is kind of his message that everything he says to the media isn't as important as what goes on out there.
Gotcha.
And, like, if the Suns are doing well, you know, he likes to say, don't get happy on the farm. You know, it's one of their things that they would say during their finals run a couple years ago. Uh-huh. So just seeing Monty going up against a guy who is an elite Hall of Fame player, like, what can you tell KD he hasn't already heard?
Right.
In the moment, hearing something like that. I mean, regardless of what happens to the Suns, that was a quintessential Monty moment. And Kevin has heard it all, but you can see that, like, Kevin heard that. That got to Kevin. He actually physically turned his whole body because it got to. I thought that was a really cool moment.
Last thing I'm going to say about this too, Christine, Wendy, and tell me if this would surprise you, because if it would, I would be shocked. Would it surprise you if the Phoenix Suns got to the NBA Finals and D-Book was Finals MVP? Mm.
No, I actually think Booker is the driving force of the team. I think Kevin Durant is kind of the, you know, he sort of sets the table, but D-Book's going to drive it. And D-Book, since the All-Star game, has been one of the top five players in the league. You know, he's only played 50 games because he had to sit out a bunch of time with the groin and hamstring injuries. But since he's come back from that, like, they had to, like, browbeat him to get him to shut it down because Book hates being out. He's come back from these hamstring injuries before, and he's not been right. They finally had to, like, lock him down in a room and say, get right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he's going to make the All-NBA team because I think the voters are going to have a hard time breaking ties, and they'll go, he only played – because I think he can only play, like, 54 games total. I think people are going to be like – but Devin Booker has been awesome. Some of the best basketball he's played in his career has happened over this last 5 or 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And there's been so much that's gone around the Suns this year. Obviously, the big trade, the Sarver stuff. People haven't noticed that Booker has been awesome. So I think in a playoff series, it would not surprise me if Booker is their leading scorer,
and just,
even with Kevin Durant on the team.
And Wendy, you notice these little things, right? Because I don't know what that just was, but we'll play through it.
Poltergeist.
Next play always, right? I think details, these slight details are things that people don't pay attention to. But for me, I'm always looking at, hey, are people willing to be overly aggressive when Kevin Durant is on the court? D-Book has been overly aggressive when KD is on the court. Mm-hmm. He's taking more shots every time.
Yeah.
So, like, there's almost something being set here about, like, this is time. It's time for me. It's time for the world to see me. And I understand who the hell I am, regardless of who is here. So, like, that is such a positive attribute, because it's easy that when Kevin Durant comes on a team, Wendy, mm-hmm. for people to defer, right? To say, oh, let me figure it out.
I'm glad you said
They're forcing KD. You figure it out around me. And I think that's an incredible part for him winning.
I'm glad you said that. In the game, they've only played four games together, so small. Yeah. In the game they played in Dallas, which you remember was a month ago now, KD hit a game winner, basically. But the possession before that, Booker has the ball in the post. I'm sitting in the second row. I was fortunate that game. Durant's out on the perimeter, and he's open. And Booker looks to him, and Durant says,
"Nope, you." Exactly.
And that was important.
Exactly.
And Booker said, okay, I'm going to go. And I think Booker actually missed. He got fouled or whatever. But, like, right from the start, Durant is coming in there. He is invested. Mm-hmm. And this is – I know we've talked, like, is it title or bust this year for the Suns? It's not.
Yeah.
Because this is a partnership these guys are going to have for the next
– Jay, well,
this is a multi-year partnership.
Well, fair.
I mean, I think the Mavericks are under a little more pressure to execute now as opposed to the Suns. The Suns – obviously they want to win. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But I think when Durant got traded to the Suns, he was looking at it as this is going to be this act of my career. It's with Booker.
There's a last window as opposed to the Mavericks where this window may close.
That's my viewpoint.
I hear you on that. But still, I mean, they are the odds favorite. It is Kevin Durant, CP3, who feels like he's 55 years old, right on the last leg. And also Devin Booker, the two most efficient lethal scorers in the game of basketball with DeAndre, and they are absolutely loaded. There's no excuses for them not to shot, other than Kevin Durant playing seven games.
Well, other than the fact that these dudes in the East are beasts.
That's true.
I mean, there's some good teams
over
here.
Oh, well, but there's pressure.
Wendy, you mentioned the fact that they played four games together. They're 4-0 in those games, obviously. The Suns, by the way, 25-12 at home and 16-23 on the road. So they definitely do perform a little bit better on the road. All right, let's talk about that Western Conference team that's struggling, the Dallas Mavericks. Lost another one last night, this time to the Philadelphia 76ers. It was 116-108 in Dallas. Is now 37-40 with five games remaining in the regular season. They remain 11th in the West and out of the play-in tournament. Kyrie spoke about his team's predicament.
This is now, again, just where we are in the season and where other teams are positioned already. It kind of looks like, a bit of a clusterfuck right now, to be honest with you, because we're, 37-40 and we're trying to fight in to get into the playing game. And it's not the expectations that I think any of us had in that locker room.
Kyrie and Luka are 4-9 when they share the court this season. Out of 473 instances of two all-star teammates playing 10 or more games together in a season, that is the worst record since the NBA-ABA merger. Jay Will, I'm going to start with you on this one. Are you surprised that things are this bad in Dallas?
Yes, I am. And I say that understanding that these guys have only played 17 games together. I say that understanding that whenever you have Dorian Finney-Smith that is no longer on the perimeter defending and Spencer Dinwiddie, that is a huge defensive aspect of your game that goes missing. I also understand that they let Jalen Brunson go for free. They got nothing in return for Jalen Brunson. And watching the rise of success for the New York Knicks, even with them winning last night with Julius Randle spraining his ankle, like, there is a core competency and leadership and toughness that comes along and a temperament that comes along with Jalen Brunson.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why you make that move is because you have two of the most prolific scorers in the NBA today on the same team. Let me tell you about what bothered me last night about this game in particular with the 76ers. And I understand, now we're in the trenches, we're in the details, because I don't like to make excuses, right? 17 games, all these things I just stated. Let's just win games. Let's focus on winning games now. There is a major concern, Wendy, that I have about Jason Kidd as a coach holding these guys accountable. In the last 8 minutes of the game, Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, who were prolific the three quarters before, took a combined five shots in the last 8 minutes of the game. A combined five shots. There is only one Dallas Maverick player who scored in the last 6 minutes of the ball game. That is Luka. Now, if you saw the strategy that the 76ers are doing, hey, we'll settle for everybody else shooting threes. But there comes a moment where when you have timeouts to burn, look, you two, Be aggressive. Mm-hmm. Luka, I know your usage rate is the second highest in the NBA. No. No possessions off. We've had leads in this game. I know that the 76ers just went on a 10-0 run, all right, in the last 6 minutes of the game. I do not care. Be aggressive. You know, per NBA.com, with 50 clutch games that the Dallas Mavericks have played this year, they were 500. They were 500. So when you talk about a team, Wendy, that last year was in the Western Conference Finals, and I know you lose pieces, you need a coach to say in these moments, and I'm just saying, he deserves a lot of criticism here as well, because people are going to start attacking Kyrie Irving. People are going to start saying, well, sometimes Luka always complains at the refs, and he walks back on defense. But there needs to be those details in those clutch moments of games for a team that is 500. Last night was unacceptable. And I think them losing games or finding ways to fold games in those moments throughout the course of this year, there are major questions you're asking around the personnel and the decision-making in clutch moments with Jason Kidd and the Dallas Mavericks. On top of, what are they going to do to plug some of those holes defensively?
Yeah, so when they made the trade, they basically took Spencer Dinwiddie, who is a good offensive player on some nights. He's good. He's great. But good offensive player. And they traded him for one of the most elite offensive guards we've ever seen in Kyrie Irving. So they were a number eight offense. They were the eighth best offense in the league when they made the trade. And the concept here was they were going to become like one or two. They were going to become an absolute killer offense to make up for the fact that they traded away their best defensive player and they were going to get worse defensively. That was the arithmetic that they made. Maybe it wouldn't lead to a title this year, but it would lead to dynamic basketball that they could plug in around. Instead, in the 20-some games since the trade, they've backslid. They're now 10th. Now, that's a stat that's loaded with circumstance because obviously Luka's missed some games, Kyrie's missed some games. But going backwards and offensively, like, they were not a top offensive team at the end of the game last night.
Uh-huh.
That's not acceptable. And so that is what worries you. If they were killing it and they were both – and they've had a couple of games where they have. If they were both killing it and they just couldn't get stops – you'd be like, well, look, we knew they couldn't get stops, but at least they're killing it. And give them a transaction cycle over the summer. You know, they'll keep Kyrie. That you could at least get the building blocks of that. The concern for me is they haven't been great on offense. I thought that was a guarantee. I thought what we were going to be doing here in the last week of the season was like, well, look, I know that they're averaging 135 points, but they're giving up 130, and that's just not going to work in the playoffs. But, boy, it's going to be fun to watch them. I mean, this is a team-building crisis. And I don't use that word lightly, crisis, because, as you said, they lose Jalen Brunson for nothing. Now they're in a situation where if they miss the playoffs, they're going to send the Knicks. Right now, they owe the Knicks a pick. It's top 10 protected. Right now, if they didn't get lucky in the lottery, which they would have a low chance of if they missed the playoffs, they'd send the 11th pick for a trade that was already failed, the Porzingis trade. Mm-hmm. So they've lost Brunson for nothing. They've traded for Kyrie Irving, who they don't control after this season, and they ship a great pick, as good of a pick as they possibly could send to the Knicks to rub salt in that wound. And I'm not sure what they can do structurally. They do have a couple of first-round picks they can trade. They do have a couple of young players that they could trade. Like, they're not totally hemmed in, but they're really in they put themselves in a corner if this doesn't work.
And you know, look, Luka's one hell of a player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody is trying to argue that. I know he is going through tough times. He obviously acknowledged that at the post-presser the other day. He was being fully transparent with his emotions. Actually, applaud him for that. Right? It's the first time he's really talked openly about how frustrated he's been with certain things. But at the end of the day, regardless of however you look at it, that is his team. Now, the one thing I was taught, Wendy, in college and in the pro, body language matters. I'm going to tell you something last night that I found myself slamming my hand on the table by it. Sometimes when I watch Luka, the body language is so discouraging to me. Instead of whining, complaining to the ref about every call, Wendy, it feels like it's every call. Please sprint back on defense. Now, I'm not putting all the onus on you. I understand how challenging it is to have a new teammate. You're losing a lot. I'm just talking about these are the slight details that sometimes makes you wonder about how much Luka really wants it. People have talked about his conditioning before, right? So when I see you after every call, go like this to the ref or do something like this to the ref. And then it's a turn and it's a – while the team, Tyrese Maxey, is pushing the ball in transition, I'm like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? So there also comes into question about leadership and body language and how to lead. And that is something that I think Luka needs to take to the next level. That's something that you see about LeBron. I'm not saying he does it great all the time. But there is an effort that is exerted when you're the leader of the team. And I think it's time for us to hold Luka accountable as it relates to conditioning and effort around when things don't go your way. Next play, man. Pick it up. Get back on defense. Don't softly jog back.
Yeah, the Mavs.
That's my thing.
The Mavs are 3-8 in their last 11 games. Wendy, you're leaving us very shortly, but we have a quick take for you because last night – Austin Reeves scored over Pat Bev and immediately did the too small thing that Pat Bev did on LeBron on Sunday. Jay Will, I heard you talking about this morning on Get Up. What were your thoughts on this situation?
I mean, first of all, I love it because the first three possessions, I mean, Austin Reeves came out, drive to the basket. He made a three. He got an and one on the fast break and yelled out, and one, right? So the kid has swag, but also I'm going to state this. With this team fully healthy, with the venom that they have, defensively, they're one of the best defensive teams in the league. The personnel and the team I saw last night is a team I think that can win the world championship. I'm going to say that, Wendy. I feel it.
Number one defensive team in the league since the trade.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Jay Will and Wendy, you are leaving us because we got to get over to the NFL. Lamar Jackson created a little drama at the NFL's annual league meeting when he tweeted on Monday that he requested a trade from the Baltimore Ravens on March 2nd. Baltimore placed the non-exclusive franchise tag on Jackson on March 7th, allowing him to speak to other teams and negotiate a contract. with them. Look at this. We have two football guys here. Harry Douglas, Bart Scott, Dan Orlovsky here with us.
Don't cut me off, Christine.
Okay. So are you, listen. Miami is playing UConn. Are you going to the game, Dan?
I'm not going to the game.
Okay.
I can't go to the game on Saturday. Yeah, my kids start their spring sports. But if UConn wins, I'm going to go Monday.
This is the first and the last.
Okay. Well, I will tell you.
You said forget your
game.
Kids.
Yeah, man, your kids, this thing will remember, man. Go have fun,
weird.
Man.
I don't know why he just said
do
that.
Something for you for once, Dan.
Is this the best Miami sports have, like, sports in general have been in a long, long time?
Don't try me. Don't try me. We still hold down the early 2000s and the 99s, okay?
Still 20 years. All right,
football.
Just checking.
Yeah, that was a really good year for us.
Just checking.
And,
what up, Harry?
What's up, bro? Good to see you, man.
Chilling.
Repping your
Christine,
school.
I wish you
go
luck,
Canes.
But you can't
go
handle
Canes.
The big fellas. You can't
go
handle
Canes.
The Miami cannot handle the big boys.
It's great Ooh. To be a Miami Hurricane. Okay, that's all I gotta say. I'll see you on Monday. Actually, I won't because I'll be there and you won't. Okay, Dan, how can the Ravens trade Lamar and stay competitive?
It's hard. That's the reality. So two things that have to be very clearly pointed out for everyone listening. One, if they entertain trading Lamar, it doesn't have to be for two first-round picks. There can be situations where Lamar signs the tag, and then there's a different form of a trade that gets handled. It doesn't that's an offer sheet that would be the two first-round picks. The second thing is this. Since Lamar became the starting quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens, they have one all-pro player on their offense skill position-wise. That's Mark Andrews. In that time frame, they averaged 28 points per game. That is the second best offense in the NFL over that span behind Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. So if they get to a point where they even entertain trading Lamar Jackson, we are talking about a guy that is a tremendous player. So it's not just, I've heard all these people say this team, it's not just, hey, let's go get a good player. You got to get a player that you think can be similar to that type of production. There's only really two situations that I look at that give you the chance to do that, realistically. Houston being the second pick of the draft and Indy being the fourth pick of the draft. Let's live in these hypothetical worlds where Baltimore gets to the point, okay, we'll trade Lamar Jackson. Houston, who has the number two pick, only likes Bryce Young. Hypothetically here, I'm assuming. They think Bryce Young's the only guy at the quarterback spot that could play. All the other guys stink. Well, what happens if Bryce Young goes number one? Houston's not going to take just anybody. So then it becomes more of a realistic situation for Houston to call Baltimore. And what happens if Baltimore is like, we think Anthony Richardson, whose pro day is today, is going to be an amazing player. That's when they sit there and go, well, maybe we could trade Lamar to Houston, get the second pick and something else. We take Anthony Richardson with it. Now they got a hit on Anthony. But that's the only way that those two situations, and the same with Indy. Hypothetically, Indy thinks only one of these two quarterbacks can play. They both get taken early on. Baltimore loves somebody else at the number four pick, and then they made the trade and hit on the rookie quarterback. But it's very difficult to sit here and think how Baltimore trades Lamar and doesn't take a step back.
Doogie?
No, you next.
Oh, I get to go next?
Yeah.
Way to come to the production meeting,
What did
Bart.
You just call him?
Doogie. Harry Douglas, Doogie.
Okay.
Doogie Howser?
He always been calling me that.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that.
That's how we roll. But listen, I think you got the right player. I just think you have the wrong team, Dan. I think we have to go to my hometown team and your former team in the Detroit Lions, who have two first-round draft picks, and I think you have an opportunity because they can give up two first-round draft picks and still have the opportunity to still have a first-round draft pick this year and a first-round draft pick next year. When I look at the draft and I look at the board, I look at teams that need quarterbacks that's unsure. Washington says that they're cool with Sam Howell, but I don't believe that at 16. Then I look at Tampa Bay, and I also look at Seattle with their second pick. I think they have an opportunity to maybe trade with the Lions, and the Lions can trade and get a future first-round draft pick that they can trade. It's not about the first two draft picks that the Lions have this year. They can trade a late one this year and the late one next year because I think they can acquire another one. I think you look at the Lions, and I think the Lions are this year's Philadelphia Eagles. I think they're poised to take a big step forward. Yeah. And if you put a player like Lamar Jackson on that roster with those type of weapons, with that offensive line, and a much improved defense throughout the draft, I think that would be an opportunity for them to take it to the next level with a player that they haven't seen the likes of a dynamic player like that. I know you play with Megatron, but that's the closest thing that they will have to Barry Sanders that we've seen in a long time.
Real quick, before you hop in, Harry, but that also – if you're Baltimore, the quarterback that you want at five, right? Detroit's got six, right, I think? And so the quarterback that you want at six has to fall all the way there. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because I think they'll go with Tyler Huntley for a season because and then Richardson can come in and he can kind of play.
So it's Richardson Hooker, at six.
Yeah, and Hendon Hooker has been moved up. We think that Seattle may go defensive end, you know, to improve their defense because they have Geno, and then they may try and move back up. So that gives you opportunity to kind of play along the board and still be able to be competitive. If you're the Lions, why not? And if when, you know, I've been there and I've been waiting for the Lions to take the next step. I feel like they're right at the doorstep. And a guy like Lamar Jackson with $20 million in salary cap space, with Jameson Williams and Swift in the backfield, you know, St. Brown on the outside, a much-improved defense. I think this could be a dynamic move, you know, for the Detroit Lions. And I think that the Ravens, this is where the Ravens are in an uncomfortable position. They have a dynamic player at a position they've never had a dynamic player at, right? So they've won both of their Super Bowls without a dynamic quarterback. So I think they were uncomfortable because it tells you that they're uncomfortable because they didn't put the weapons that you put around a franchise quarterback. They kept building the defense when they should have went out there and got him his Jamar Chase. They should have got him his Stephon Diggs. But they didn't do that. They went out and they paid Peters. They paid Humphreys. They go out and get Marcus Williams. They didn't do anything on the outside for him in a dynamic way. So I think the Ravens are more comfortable building with defense, run game, and decent quarterback play. This gives them opportunity to have a project and have, you know, Tyler Huntley, who I think they feel strongly about, but they definitely would need an upgrade later.
Yeah, for me, I think it's all three of those teams. The Lions that you mentioned and also the Houston Texans and the Indianapolis Colts. When you look at the Houston Texans, I like the fit for Lamar in that offensive system. We talk about our offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowick, right, who was with San Francisco 49ers from 2017 to 2022. So it's going to be that Shanahan tree-like system. Plus, they're in a position at number two. And I think if you're going to be able to make this trade, it has to be in an area where you can potentially get a quarterback, right? That's what the Houston Texans have. They also have two first-round draft picks. You look at the Indianapolis Colts. I like Shane Steichen being able to coach Lamar Jackson. So that's a positive for Lamar as well. But at number four, are you able to get a quarterback right there if you're the Baltimore Ravens? And I say all this to make sure I put this over the tree. It's going to be hard to be competitive because Lamar Jackson is a unanimous MVP award winner. It's only been two in the history of football, Tom Brady and Lamar Jackson. And then you mentioned the Lions. I like them there with that offensive line. They just signed back Marvin Jones Jr., which I thought was a great pickup. Jameson Williams is going to be healthy. Now at six, you're going to have to be able to have a player drop at the quarterback position, though. Unless you're thinking about going with Hendon Hooker. Unless you're thinking about going with Hendon Hooker and let him sit a year to repair that ACL, and still they're still going to keep Jared Goff. Those three teams, though, is the more likely deal for the Baltimore Ravens. But still, even with those three teams, you got to hit on those quarterbacks. We already know Lamar Jackson is a proven commodity.
Yeah.
So it's going to be hard for them to be competitive, I think, either way.
Hey, here's my thing with the Lions, okay? I do not believe that the Lions as a whole roster are good enough to right now go put Lamar Jackson in and all of a sudden we are like real, real Super Bowl contenders. This is a defense that would have 40 hung on them for the first half of the season last year. So I think Detroit is sitting there going, now if this was next year, Bart, I'd be a little bit more on board with it. But the reality is this, if you're Baltimore, right, and Detroit calls you and we have the sixth pick of the draft, I would be absolutely floored if at least three of these quarterbacks are not gone. And I think Anthony Richardson's going to be gone by six, candidly. I do. I honestly believe that. So if you're Baltimore and Detroit calls you, are you going to take Will Levis at six? Hendon Hooker? So we're going to take a young man who's 25, going to be 26, coming off of an ACL, and that's what we're going to sell to our fan base is going, hey, we're going to replace Lamar with that. That's why when I sit here and have these conversations, if you're Baltimore, you sit there and go, unless I get to choose, unless I get the guy that I want, not the guy that is left over, so to speak, the guy that I want, how can I go into my locker room and go, oh, man, Roquan, we just traded for you and gave you all that money, and I know that you think we're a playoff football team, but we're just going to take anybody and plug him in. That's what, I don't think Baltimore can live in that world.
But you're the Baltimore Ravens. You won two Super Bowls with Joe Flacco and Trent Dilfer. You listen. The program
world nowadays in the AFC.
Yeah, but the program speaks for itself. We thought last year that Mike Tomlin was going to have his first losing season. coaches coach, and the Baltimore Ravens and Harbaugh are those type of programs. I think you take a step back, but you are able to get compensation to build your team around whoever you decide to play at the quarterback position. And listen, to your point with the Lions, see, you know, Gardner Johnson and them going out and getting Sutton at cornerback, they're not as bad defensively already, and we haven't even gotten to the draft yet. So I think this team is going to be better. We know the secondary free agent market happens June 2nd. They'll still have cheese on the taco to go out and get a couple complimentary pieces, some veterans, one-year deals to solidify that defense. That offense speaks for itself.
My only rebuttal to that is that when you look at the AFC and you look at the quarterbacks you got to go Monsters. Through to get to a Super Bowl, that's Monsters. The only thing that comes to my mind.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
The use of a pitch clock shaved 26 minutes off of spring training games, and MLB is set to use it for the first time in the regular season starting today. Pitchers are given 15 seconds between pitches to throw the ball when the bases are unoccupied and 20 seconds when runners are on base. A ball is added to the count if a pitcher is found in violation of the clock. Jessica Mendoza and Freddie Coleman hanging out with us this morning to talk a little baseball on opening day. Jessica, I'm going to start with you. Who will benefit the most from the pitch clock?
Oh, I got Max Scherzer. I mean, I was watching him. We had Mets earlier in spring training. He understands. You talked about the 15 seconds, but you remember the hitters only get one timeout now. So once that's happened, and in spring it has against Max Scherzer, he now will stand there and almost stall and kind of get the hitter thinking, is he going to throw it now? Is he going to throw it now? And they have to, at 8 seconds, be alert and attentive to the pitcher. We actually have seen more violations called on the hitters because pitchers like Max Scherzer understanding how to use that already as a tactic.
Jessica, I love that, especially as a New York Mets fan. I hope Max Scherzer can do all those things as an old head, try to keep those young heads off balance when it comes to the hitters. But I'm going to go up the beaten path a little bit. I think it's going to be Shohei Ohtani that's going to benefit the most because he's the only player in Major League Baseball that will know exactly what that's like on both sides, being a pitcher and a batter. Remember, this is a guy last year hit 34 home runs and 95 RBIs, but as a pitcher, 15-9, 2.33 ERA, 212 strikeouts and 160 plus innings. If anybody's going to be a benefit, because he's the only one that's going to see both sides of that equation when it comes to being a batter and being a pitcher. And believe me, he's only going to get better knowing that he has a pitch clock at his advantage that he can use, because he's going to have that intel from being in the batter's box and how to try to keep pitches off balance and do the same thing as a pitcher. It would not surprise me if Shohei Ohtani goes beyond 15 wins this year, because he's the only one in Major League Baseball that is going to have the benefit of knowing exactly what the pitch clock is like and what the batter's clock is going to be like in Major League Baseball this year.
I agree. Pitch rules, all the pitching changes, all the rule changes are going to be number one storyline. Shohei Ohtani is going to be the biggest storyline of any player. We watched him in the WBC. He was already moving so fast, being able to get kind of already starting to deke hitters, because you're right. He is the only player in the entire game that understands both sides. He'll be a free agent this year, and that's going to be a huge question mark where he ends up this time next year.
Oh, he's going to be a Dodger, because the Dodgers will open up the bank vault for him, because look at the losses that they had so far, where you lose Trey Turner, you lose Justin Turner. I think Tyler Anderson is a sneaky pickup by the Los Angeles Angels, a lefty that can really help out a sneaky rotation. It would not surprise me if the Angels are in the thick of things for a wild card to the final two weeks, of the regular season. But believe me, he's going to really look nice in Dodger blue instead of Angels red, because they're going to open the bank vault for him next year. They are not going to let him stay in Los Angeles and play for the Angels in 2024.
Okay, guys, I know it's a little early since we haven't seen any regular season baseball be played yet, but Jess, I'm going to start with you on this one again. Which division race will be better this season, the AL East or the NL East?
Oh, NL East all the way. And it's exciting. We always talk AL East because you got the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays. I get it. But you think about, first of all, the Mets have made the most noise. Steve Cohen, hello, $355 million payroll. We've never seen anything like this in baseball. And they're not even the best team in the East. I mean, you think about the Phillies. They're the defending NL reigning champs, making it to the World Series, upsetting everyone. And I've actually got the Atlanta Braves to make it to the World Series this year and win it all. That's the team I'm most excited about coming out of the East. So those three top teams, I mean, I don't think it's even close to the best division in all of baseball.
See, this is why Jessica Mendoza is so smart, because she and I are on the same plane when it comes to the Atlanta Braves, because a lot of conversation about the Padres. And to me, the Padres could be the Buffalo Bills this year, where I want to see how they handle being the hunted instead of being the hunter. And I know they're going to get Fernando Tatis back at the end of April, and you put him in that lineup with Machado and also with those guys, Xander Bogaerts. They signed for $280 million in the offseason. But I want to see how they handle being the hunted instead of the hunter. But I'm with you about the Atlanta Braves. I think they come out of the National League and win the whole shebang. But I think the better race is going to be in the American League East, because we talk about bloodbath baseball. All five of those teams can't stand each other. You cannot invite them to the family barbecue and think that food won't be flying around. That will not be the case. You got the Yankees, the Blue Jays, the Orioles, the Red Sox, and Tampa Bay. And I think four teams in that division could win at least 85 games involving the Yankees, Tampa Bay, the Baltimore Orioles, as well as the Toronto Blue Jays. And when you have that kind of, as they like to say in the Chappelle Show, hate, it makes for baseball, that's going to be really, really good. And the East is the same way in the National League. But I look at those four teams and how that's going to be a better division race, because I think the Braves are still a class above no matter what kind of team we're going to see from the Phillies. And it must be nice to be Steve Cohen that you can write a check and every bank in this country would bounce. That's how much money you have. But I think the NL East will be terrific. I think the AL East with those four teams that can win at least 85 games could be just a little bit better.
Okay, forget the division race. I mean, who's the best team in New York? Because ultimately, that's what people want to know. I mean, we can talk AL East, NL East all day long, but we got the Mets and Yankees. We talked about that payroll with the Mets. Then you've got the Yankees re-signing Judge. They re-signed Anthony Rizzo. You think about Gerrit Cole, Carlos Rodon, a huge signing. He'll start the year on the injured list, but he will be back into that rotation. And I'm excited just to see that. The best division, but the best team in the best city of baseball, which is Mets, Yankees. And right now, that is something that's up in the air. I've got Mets early on, but the Yankees right now are looking like one of the toughest teams to come out of the AL.
Okay, Freddie, I like that you called it winning the whole shebang-a-bang, because yesterday Tim Kirchen said that he thinks the Padres are going to win the entire shebang-a-bang. But I'm going to ask you guys this. Who will win the NL West? Is it the Padres or the Dodgers, Jess?
I got the Dodgers. I mean, I'm all about some upset, and anytime that we can come up with like something that, especially because there is so much love right now going to San Diego, and I'm with Monty. I mean, literally listening to him exactly nail it with, they are the team everyone's watching. And yes, they've got the superstars. They've got every name. Are you kidding me? Yes, Manny Machado, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr. Xander Bogaerts is now at shortstop, putting Tatis into the outfield. But to me, the Los Angeles Dodgers know how to do it. I get that they are going to be a different look team. They lost Justin Turner. They lost Cody Bellinger. But hold on and watch Miguel Vargas, James Outman. Those are two new guys that will be onto this team, and they need new blood on this team. This is a team that won 111 games. They won 9 of the last 10 division titles. And I believe the Padres are going to struggle with the target on their back.
Jess, I'm with you. And the one thing, the one advantage I believe the Dodgers have over the star-studded lineup the Padres have is that the Dodgers have a Mookie Betts that we know can carry a baseball team. That whatever loss is out there, Mookie Betts is going to say, oh, really? Remember, I had 35 home runs last year, and I know how to lead a baseball team. I'm an MVP. Who's going to be that person for the San Diego Padres? Is it going to be Manny Machado? Is it going to be Fernando Tatis Jr. when he comes back? Can it be somebody else? Either way, that pocket is empty as far as I'm concerned with the Padres and their talent. I don't worry about that at the Dodgers. I'm worried about Miguel Vargas. I know he needs to work in his defense. He has an iron glove right now, but he's got some kind of stick in the middle of that line that can really make things a lot better, losing a Trey Turner, losing a Justin Turner. So I'm with you as far as that goes. But the one advantage that the Dodgers have, other than the fact they can have Shohei Ohtani next year on this baseball team, is the fact they got Mookie Betts that can lead this team. And I still wonder, who's going to be that guy that when you deal with that pressure and it starts to weigh down a team in San Diego, and I think inevitably that's going to happen, who's going to be the guy that pulls them together and say, hey, guys, we're the Padres. We're not ready to challenge the Dodgers. We're ready to beat the Dodgers. Whoever that guy has to show up, and if he doesn't show up, the Dodgers may not win 111 games last year, but they may not need to stay ahead of the San Diego Padres this year.
And Freddie Freeman, too. I mean, add another big name that'll help lead this team. It's ridiculous over there.
No doubt.
All right, guys. Always great seeing you, Freddie. And just so excited that we're talking more of how Mad Dog would call it the baseball now that the opening day is.